On this special edition of The Source, we're at Ohio Linux Fest. We have interviews with John Mad Dog Hall, Max Spivak of the Fedora Project, and Joe Bourne of Neuros. I'm Aaron Newcomb, and you're watching The Source. Hey there, once again, I'm here fortunate enough to be with John Mad Dog Hall. I caught him in the hallway, and we kind of stepped into a quiet place to do a little interview. So, John, thanks very much. I really appreciate you doing the interview today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Let's start out with what you've been up to lately. I know things have kind of been changing. I know you're really busy with travel everywhere. It seems like you've been everywhere in the world. So why don't you give us a little update to what you've been doing lately?
Well, like you said, I do a lot of travel. I've been to over 100 different countries, and a lot of them more than once. Germany, I've been to a lot. In Brazil, I think they have a revolving door on the immigration office for me. So, and in traveling around and talking about free software, I've noticed that a lot of people, of course, are very enthusiastic about it, and the people all over the world are really nice people, and that's one of the things that keeps driving me forward with the free software movement. And also, in some of the places I go, they don't have very much money, and they are looking for a way that they can utilize computers and software to solve some of their problems. So that's kind of some of the things I've been working on the last 5 or 6 years. I've been kind of concentrating on what I call emerging economies, economies where with a little bit of software and a dropping price of the hardware and stuff like that, that they can solve a lot of the problems they have. So about 2 years ago, I met this guy in Toronto, Canada, by the name of Andrew Gregg, and he was very much into ecology and green computing and things like that. And he would, from time to time, go down to this place called Earth University in Costa Rica and come back and be all excited about green, low-power computing. And we started to look at, you know, what could be done with low-power computing, and then from there we led to ecological computing, because a lot of the computers of today have a lot of bad stuff in them, mercury and different types of acids and stuff, so if you put them into a landfill, they can actually pollute the water supply and stuff. And also just the volume of them.
Is that what was driving the whole RoHS effort from the European Union to get things cleaned up?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, back in the early days of computing, they really had some bad stuff in computers. But, you know, you would spend a couple $1 million on a computer system back in those days, and that was when $1 million is a lot of money. And they didn't really expect that they would just be thrown away and stuff, right? Or put in a landfill. But today, with a lot of people having PCs in their homes, and they say at the end of the life of the PC, what do we do with it? Well, nobody really wants to buy it, and the cost of refurbishing is actually more than the PC is worth. So a lot of times it's taken to the dump. And a lot of dumps these days are charging you money to take them away, because they have to be disassembled and treated, you know, commercially to be able to be disposed of at all. So we took a look at that, and then we started thinking about how could we make computers easier to use, because that's another part of the problem. I mean, my parents are 85 and 83 years old, and they really can't use computers. They like to surf the web. They like to send email. I get email from them, and they get email from their friends, but they also spend about 12 to 15% of their time just trying to make the computer work in the first place. And most of that is because they still use Windows. All their friends use Windows and stuff, so they're still using Windows. And I keep threatening to have them set up with Linux and only Linux in the time to go down there. But it just hasn't gotten around to that yet. Maybe this next Christmas I may do that. In any case, we wanted to make computers easy to use. We looked at the various models of things that have been successfully used, and very frankly, the telephone system was a thing where you had a telephone, basically you picked it up, you expected it to work. It was a hugely complex network behind it. There's a lot of energy and materials that went into it, and you had a bunch of very trained people to take care of it. And that was, but it was still easy to use for people. And so we said, well, what would happen if we developed a business plan where there were really people who were systems administrators, that the average home user could have a systems administrator more or less dedicated to them? And how do we do that, and how do we make this work? And we looked at the thin client model that was done by the LTSP people, and that was a very good, very strong point. We looked at using very, very low power thin clients. And we've been developing this business model to make a sustainable, job-creating, end-user environment. And when I say end-user, it could be also a bank, it could be a school, it could be a hotel, any place we can put a thin client computer and then have a server system in the background actually doing the heavy computing and have a system administrator who makes a certain amount of their money just from administering the system, and then maybe even more money in doing things like selling extra hardware, selling extra software, extra services, doing educational courses and things like that. So we've been working on that business model, and in certain countries, the economics work out very nicely. And we're in the process of making partnerships in those companies, in those countries, and implementing that type of a business model. So that's taking up a lot of my time. My article, column for the Linux Journal called The Beachhead, the Linux Journal people decided that had been running for about a year and a half, and they wanted to try some other columns in that. And so I'm going to be doing a little bit of a community effort thing on their website where I'm going to be writing about events like the Ohio Linux Fest. Mm-hmm. That I go to and say, you know, what were the highlights of that, and things like that. And then also writing some things that are forward-looking as to events I'm going to that I've been to before and that they're about to have another version of it. And to be able to just to make people aware of those. And I'm going to try and set up a calendar so that people can say, well, here's an event that's coming. Gee, I want to have an event that, you know, is geographically close, but I want to make it far enough away in time that I'm not going to overlap. Or I don't want to have my event happening at the same time this other major event is happening that's going to attract all the really good speakers, so I want to be able to have a shot at getting some good speakers come in. So we're going to try and set up a little calendar to do that, and that's going to be occupying my Linux Journal writing time for a little bit.
Well, I think it's great. This is your second year, I believe, at the Ohio Linux Fest, and you gave a great talk, great keynote at the end of the conference last year. I thought it was wonderful, and you're going to be giving another talk today, correct? Now, can you maybe tell us a little bit about what you're going to be talking about?
Well, actually, my talk today is going to be about the work I'm doing right now, the green movement and the trying to create these jobs and things, and talking about the digital divide. You know, I've been watching the OLPC project for some time, and these guys, God bless them, they always talk about the little kid out in the middle of the African plain sitting underneath the banyan tree and using a notebook and flipping up the little antennas and stuff. And I am really happy that they're trying to make those systems that indestructible and that useful for those kids and stuff like that. But I care about those kids, I really do. But I also care about the 2.4 million kids who live in things like favelas in Sao Paulo, Brazil. and the internet isn't 500 miles away from them. A lot of times it's only 40 feet away from them, but they still can't get it. That 40 feet might as well be 400 miles. And they have electricity. They don't need to sit there and crank it with their feet or their arms or anything else. They have electricity. But, you know, the electricity sometimes is intermittent, and sometimes it's not available all day. And so what you want to do is give them a computer system that might be able to run off a storage battery, a truck battery, or something like that. And that would be able to give them continuous computing. And the other problem with most desktop computers today is that people turn them off. People turn them off because they want to conserve electricity and stuff like that. But when your computer is off, it's no more effective for computing than that trash can over there, right?
Yep.
So you want to have a computer that's always on. You want to have a computer that can access your telephone, it accesses your alarm clock, it accesses your TV recording, it accesses all those things that you want to have it on. Your storage system, when you're far flung away and you have access to the internet, you want to be able to access your disks and your data back at your house.
Right.
You know? And I know that there's a lot of online services that say, well, we'll store data online and everything, but there's a lot of people that feel very uncomfortable with having somebody they don't know storing their data. So we've been working on this business plan of having multiple levels of storage and stuff like that. And I have my little Cthulhu box, which is here. And this is a little box. This is actually our previous model. The current model is somewhat like this. It has 16-bit stereo sound in and out, and it has four USB ports. And it can hold up to a gigabyte of main memory. And we've got a 60 gigabyte, I believe, disk in here at the present time. And it has 100 megabit per second Ethernet on it. And the whole thing draws less than 20 watts of power. So, you know, one third the light of an incandescent light bulb, one third the power of an incandescent light bulb, and this runs the Cthulhu unit. And it runs off of 12 volts. So again, you could just plug this right into a battery and have a storage component of the battery and recharge the battery. And if you wanted to have more storage than would fit inside this box, you can find 2.5-inch disk drives that fit inside of an external enclosure that are USB powered. You can plug them in. You can put a lot of storage on this. If you put an 802.11 dongle on it, you can then attach to your storage as, you know, network attached storage or something like that, or tie in through the wired Ethernet.
Is that what this is in the back, or if there's an antenna?
Well, that's what I didn't want to show you. That's because this is the previous device.
Okay.
This is this has the a piece. This had a mini PCI card in it, and we found that by getting rid of that, we could reduce the price considerably. Because again, you know, when you talk about emerging economies and stuff like that, a lot of them don't have very much money. So when you can knock $50 or $60 off of a box that's, you know, going to be selling for $200, you know, that's a lot of money.
It probably reduces on power consumption.
It does. For the people that don't need wireless, you're right, it reduces the power consumption. So that was another reason. And we're not only going to be carrying those types of things, but we are going to also be carrying some other units, because we talked with the government of Brazil, and they said, you know, in these whole digital divide things, yeah, people will be happy if they can get a computer at a relatively low price and stuff. But there's a certain segment that they say, hey, we don't want to be treated like digital divide. If you could figure out a way that we can get something that's a little bit more sexy, you know, like a notebook that's low power and
right.
stuff like that, and you know, sell it to us over on a time basis, or at least time basis, so that we could pay for it over 2 or 3 years with everything else, that's one thing. So we went out and we looked for the OpenMoCo project, because we also believe very much in open source.
Mm-hmm.
And we contacted the OpenMoCo people, and we're working with them now to sell, when they release it, their FIC computer or FIC phone with the OpenMoCo software on it. And they gave me a unit, unfortunately dead unit, to be able to take around and show people. But I have seen it live, and it has a very nice screen on it, a very high resolution, and it'll be running Linux. because it's an open project, they'll provide all of the source code for it so that people could go ahead and change it and make modifications. And we're looking into services now to be able to make sure that people will be able to sign up the Voice over IP service or sign up the GSM service and be able to utilize it. But if they don't like the services that we suggest, they're free to go out and get another service. You know, we're not going to force anything on them. We're just going to act as a gateway to help them find a service that we've evaluated and we think it's a good service. And, you know, if they want to sign up for it, fine. If they don't, they're free to change it. And that's the whole thing about choice and openness.
Well, I know we did a blog post on the OpenMoCo about the same time that the iPhone came out, just because I feel strongly that a closed platform is not what we need today. We really need an open platform that people can turn into whatever they want, whatever will work on that hardware. So, I'm really excited about the OpenMoCo. I contacted them, actually, and tried to get them to send me an eval unit, but I'm guessing that probably everybody and their brother is asking him about that. And if John Mad Dog Hall can only get a dysfunctional demo unit, there's no way I'm going to be able to get one. But that's great. I'm glad to see it. I agree. I think the device has great potential, and I think if people buy the phones and support the project, I think it'll really take off. So that's great. Well, hey, I don't want to keep you because I know you've got a talk coming up. And you probably need to get ready for that. But I really appreciate you taking just a few minutes and sitting down with us, telling us, what you're up to, what's going on, and showing us your gadgets. That's great. I think both of these devices, I think, have a lot of potential, and I hope they really succeed, especially, like you say, in the emerging markets. So thank you very much.
I just want to say one more thing about this phone. It's being manufactured by a company called Vic, who just so happens to be the manufacturer of the Thin Client that we sell. But if you think of this as a phone, you're really doing it as a service. This is actually a computer system, and you hook up a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse, and if you're in any type of 802.11 connectivity, you can access your data, you can process it, and you can put a mini multimedia card inside of this, or micromedia multimedia card inside of this, and hold a fantastic amount of data. So for a lot of people, this might be their computer system and their telephone. And all of that is very exciting. So we're going to see how this works out. We're going to be, and we'll be looking for ideas of people to say, well, how do you use this? And what do you do with this? And that way the community can help people, not only the Vic phone, but other phones that are based on the OpenMoCo software.
Well, I think that's what it's all about. It's the power of open source, and that's what we're all about, too. So, John Mad Dog Hall, thank you very much. Good luck in your talk, and I look forward to hearing it.
Okay, thank you very much.
So what we have here is the Neuros OSD, and it's used for, it's largely a video jukebox. So as you can see, we've got it here in this case with a USB hard drive, which actually we're not using right now. But this is a 500 gig USB hard drive, so you can have all your videos from a whole variety of sources at one place and all accessible with your remote control, and all your videos at your fingertips. So the first thing we'll show is just a very simple, as we browse from USB, and you can see we're not hooked to a network here, but if we were, you can browse, all the files on your LAN through universal plug and play. In this case, we'll just do it from the USB. Here's our media folder. Obviously, we've got music, we've got videos. Here's a simple clip we've got. The OSD supports up to 720 by 480 DVD resolution. So you can see here, I'll give you another real quick example. It's actually got even a little editor here that you can cut out clips of. I'll show you, let me bring this up. we pause this. We've actually got an editor here which will actually let you take clips and segments of video. You can bookmark it and come back later, all that kind of basic stuff. The audio player is actually ported from XMS, so you know we've got a whole host of functionality that comes from that. It's a very robust, mature audio player. So I'll show you this. You can cue up obviously music and all the kinds of stuff you'd expect. There's that. We've got, you know, photo browser and all the kind of stuff you'd expect. What's great is that, you know, we have all these inputs and outputs on the front, so you can actually write direct to in this case, we've got a thumb drive here. We've got, you know, compact flash, this is a USB host connector. We've got SD and memory sticks. You can write directly, pop out, play on a PSP or a lot of PDAs or handhelds. You can record to a whole host of sources. This is a network device, so it can record to network attached drives, or can record to the hard drive right on your PC or wherever you want. And then some of the other networking functionality we've got. One of the updated new things that came out of directly out of the community is a YouTube browser. And I've got a bit of a circuitous route here to the internet, so this may be a little bit slow. But I mean, basically, this allows you to search just as you would on YouTube. One of the other interesting things that's developed out of this is that we have an interesting kind of mashup between the XMS2 and YouTube, where it actually brings up a pop-up window with any song you're listening to, and it says, "Find this video," and then it actually populates the YouTube search with the metadata from that song. So that's kind of neat. And I think that kind of covers.
Thanks for the update.
Sure. So I'm here with Max Spivak, and he is the Fedora Project Manager, right? Yeah. Fedora Project Manager. And we're here. He actually did the keynote from this morning at Ohio Linux Fest. And I tracked him down and wanted to ask him a few questions. So first of all, fill us in on how the work is going with Fedora 8.
Sure. Well, Fedora 8 is scheduled for release basically in the second week of November, which we all know everything gets delayed. So ultimately the goal is none of the engineers get to go home for Thanksgiving until it's out the door. So it was a little bit of a shorter release cycle this time. We put Fedora 7 out on May 31st, and normally it's a six-month release, but that would land you more or less getting close to Christmas. And so we decided rather than have everything fall over into the new year, let's tighten up the release schedule and get it out before Thanksgiving. So some of the, you know, briefly, some of the cool stuff that's going into it. When we did Fedora 7, the biggest thing that we did there was a rebuilding of the Fedora infrastructure, basically so that the whole build system and all the tools that take the RPMs that come out of the build system and actually create the distribution were all totally in the hands of community, right? So anyone could make their own version of Fedora.
Yep.
And we've seen that happen quite a bit, right? The Fedora project itself released a GNOME and a KDE version of Fedora. But we've seen folks over the past few months use all these tools and put together a couple of other sort of proposals and package sets. And we've taken two of those, and made them sort of official versions of Fedora 8. So we're going to release a live CD, though actually it's more than 700 megabytes, so you need to put it on a DVD or a USB stick or something like that.
Yeah.
That's basically chock full of all of the standard sort of developer kind of things.
Okay.
So some of the main Fedora engineers, like Jeremy Katz, who works for us up in Boston, they basically are already using this, like, day to day. And, he just brings his USB stick in the morning. It's running Rawhide, which is the nightly build of Fedora. And he sticks it in his computer, and he does all his work and builds the next day's version of Fedora, which he then puts back on his USB key and goes on home. So it's a good kind of dog food sort of process.
Right.
So we got that, and it incorporates... one of the things that it's incorporating for folks who are interested in Java, is sort of the first cut of the OpenJDK stuff, which is finally kind of landing and can be built up in RPM form, which for people who are Java programmers and Java users is a pretty cool thing, yeah. Finally, because it no longer has to be this sort of second-class citizen,
right.
And folks
right.
who want to use it can have a lot easier time getting that installed.
Right.
So
right.
so we'll see how solid that ends up being in Fedora 8. I think that certainly by the time Fedora 9 rolls around, it'll be even better. And given the fact that that JBoss is now part of Red Hat, I think that's sort of a good example of the Fedora project not only being a thing for community people, mm-hmm. right, and getting this new code in the hands of community people, but it's also a place where we see the investment in the Fedora project, turning back around and being helpful to Red Hat,
right.
kind of making that thing go along. So the other new version of Fedora that we're creating was created by a guy in Europe. I think he lives in France now. He might have moved to Germany. I'm not really sure. His name is Chitlesh Gura, and he's a college student studying electrical engineering. And he built a specialized version of Fedora that has all the sort of electrical engineering stuff that you'd want to use if you were doing computer systems engineering or anything like that.
Right.
And so he built that up, and he did a lot of testing of it and made it pretty good. And so we're turning that into a version of Fedora that we're going to trumpet a little bit. And,
wow.
and again, so it sort of shows community people being able to directly impact what's going on.
Right. Now what about
some
new
of
GNOME?
Yep.
Right.
Well, 2.20 or
right.
whatever got released a couple days ago. It's already in the nightly builds.
Right.
We're going to pull in however far along they are toward KDE4. I guess that got delayed a little bit,
yeah.
but however much they've got, before we release, we'll pull that in and
OpenOffice.
You know, all the
or whatever 2.3.
Yeah, all the. I mean, we basically rev everything in Fedora to
right.
the latest upstream,
right.
so. That's all the new stuff should be in there from a kind of general package level kind of point of view.
And I noticed over at your booth you had one laptop per child. I know that the what they're using as basically the desktop, if there is such a thing on that device, it's a little different, but basically they're using a version of Fedora as well, right? Can you talk a little about your interaction with one laptop per child and how that's going?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the one laptop per child is based off of Fedora. The desktop that they use is called Sugar, actually,
right.
and it's really
it's
funny because
different.
we've got video. They sent a bunch of people from Red Hat, from our video production team, down to Brazil a while back, and we're videotaping. Maybe first graders, maybe not even first graders, using these things and doing incredible stuff with it. And then they come back up to the office and they hand these things out to marketing folks or sales folks or whoever's wandering
right.
around, and no one can do anything with it, right?
That's
people
right.
can't even turn it on, right? The kids are doing incredible, making music, and the adults like don't even know how to unlatch the hinge.
Right.
But yeah, the one laptop is based off of Fedora. When you turn it on, and you can even see the now loading Fedora thing on there. The relationship that Red Hat in general has with those guys is basically we've got a team of folks that Red Hat is—they're Red Hat employees, and Red Hat's paying them their salary. But basically, the same way Red Hat pays a bunch of people and says your only mission in life is to work on Fedora, we've got a few people. They basically say, "Here's your salary. Just go involve yourself with OLPC."
Wow.
And a guy named Chris Blizzard is leading that up for us. And obviously, I work for Red Hat, but I think it's a great thing because I think these are very talented engineers, and basically we're saying we're going to subsidize you to spend all your professional time working on this
right.
product. So.
Right. Yeah, that's great.
It's nice that Red Hat's making money and they're able to dedicate resources that they take that effort. Of course, and a lot of it comes back around, right? I mean, even if it doesn't go into enterprise, I mean, eventually it may. You never know.
Yeah.
So, or other products may be developed. I think that's really cool. Now, as the leader of the project, maybe talk a little bit about that. I mean, what's kind of involved in that? I mean, what's your day-to-day like? What do you do? Obviously, you're here at the conference, right? So you must do a lot of that.
Right.
But, what's involved with being the leader of a project like that?
Sure. So the best way to describe my job in the fewest possible words is basically sort of like the general manager of the Fedora project. When they gave me the job, they said, we want you to be the one throat to choke for Fedora. And if it does really well, we're just going to give you a pat on the back. And if it doesn't do really well, we're going to give you a kick in the butt and send you out the door. So in that sense, I don't write code. My background is in my degree's in computer science. I spent the first couple years of my career as a QA engineer, some at Red Hat, some at other places. But now it's basically a general sort of leadership job. A major part of it is, sort of the underlying principle that goes about what I do every day is trying to basically just listen to people. Because, you know, if nothing else, right, what we've learned doing Fedora and all the other free software is that, you know, the communities, right, are where the smartest people are. Mm-hmm. And if you just are sort of, I guess, smart enough and humble enough to go out and say to all these really smart volunteers who are giving their time to the project, you know, what do you think needs to be done? What do you think are the most important things? If you ask 20 people, you know, you'll get different answers, but you'll start to see a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of look at my job as kind of being to, you know, see the places where a lot of people are sort of saying something similar and figure out how you can turn that into a vision that you can sell to engineering managers, that you can sell to mm-hmm. finance people. And then there's part of the job that's sort of to be like, you know, the go-between with the lawyers and get legal stuff sorted out. And a lot, obviously, here we are at Ohio Linux Fest, so there's sort of the public face and do all the public speaking mm-hmm. and things like that as well. So that's sort of a summary of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, it definitely sounds like it keeps you busy anyway. So, yeah, wow. But it's also, I think, it sounds like very exciting and very rewarding as well. I mean, every 6 months you get to see, you know, brand new operating system roll out the door and see all the web servers go crazy with trying to download it and stuff like that. So I think it's great.
I think that, you know, there's really only a handful of people who have the privilege to spend all their day working on Fedora and also get a paycheck from Red Hat doing it. And I think it's one of the best jobs within the company because it is... as close as what still exists to, like, I think the sort of the soul of Red Hat and what made Red Hat great, you know, at the very beginning.
Right.
And that is, you know, this is a service industry now. It's not a software industry. Your brand is the only thing you have of value, and protecting and building the community that is associated with you is the core to all of that. And so the most important part of my job is making sure everyone else within Red Hat remembers that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that hard to do.
Right. Okay.
Well, great. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you taking the time. As a Red Hat user from the 5.1 days forward, still running Fedora on my desktop and do all my video editing on Fedora. I've mentioned that on the podcast before. So, you know, I just want to thank you for all your efforts, for sure, on my behalf, because you make this show possible. And all the developers and engineers, of course. Not just you, but you as in the Fedora team, right? So thanks especially for that, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us. All right, great. See you later. So I'm here with Richard Wyatt of the other OLF. That would be the Ontario Linux Fest. And he's going to tell us a little bit about what's coming up, because that's coming up in a few weeks. Is that right?
It is. That's right. That's coming up in 2 weeks on the 13th of October in Toronto.
Okay, great. Why don't you start out just by telling us a little bit of how Ontario Linux Fest got started? Where'd you get the idea for it?
Well, actually, we totally ripped it off from the Ohio Linux Fest. We've been coming to the Ohio Linux Fest for 4 years now. And on the drive from Toronto, we take about seven hours to drive down. And we talk about what presentations do we want to see and what do we want to get out of the conference. And on the way back, the only thing we can talk about is when can we do this again and how do we get it closer to home. And so we've taken all of that inspiration. And last year we finally decided that it had to be that we would do it closer to home. And we selected Toronto as the focus and the location for our Ontario Linux Fest.
All right, great. So you guys are getting pretty close, right?
We are.
What's the official date?
The official date is the 13th of October. It's on a Saturday.
Okay, so we're getting pretty close. And so how's the progress coming? I mean, how is it going? Do you have the speakers lined up and all that?
We do. We have a great lineup of speakers. How's it going? Well, it's the first time we've done this this event, and it's the first time we've done this sort of event organizing, so we really have no clue how well it's going. But it seems like it's going really well. We do have an awesome lineup of speakers and a fantastic lineup of presentations. We've got some general interest presentations that everybody will want to attend, like stuff on the latest KDE and the latest GNOME desktops. And in fact, our event is on the 7th birthday of OpenOffice.org. And so we've got Luis Suarez-Potts, whose name I have to learn how to pronounce properly, who is going to be talking about OpenOffice 3, which is coming up soon. And we're really excited to have Luis coming and presenting for us. But we've also got very technical presentations that are of interest to a more focused audience who want to get in-depth on a topic, something like the forecast for Linux through the year 2020. And then we've got some inspirational topics that'll be interesting to the community at large as well on things like the position of women in open source and interesting projects like the United Way Linux project that is a huge success story on a local scale in Ontario. And I know that our attendees are going to have a great time seeing all of those speakers.
Right. Well, that sounds really, really great. I mean, I think it's great that you guys are able to do that. And that how many people are on your team?
You know, I'm not sure. There are three or four of us on the main team, and we've got a good-sized double handful of assistants and volunteers helping us out. We're all volunteers, of course. It's all community-run. But we've had a lot of help from Dr. Peter H. Salas, who's known as the Unix historian, and from John Mad Dog Hall, who have just been instrumental in putting this together with us this year. And then John Van Ostrand and myself have been taking the main organizational role, and all of our assistants back at our home Linux user groups in Kitchener-Waterloo and Toronto and surrounding areas as well.
Great. And Linus Torvalds is going to be your keynote, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Linus is going to be our keynote. I'm not sure he knows that yet,
okay.
But we're all looking forward to seeing him there.
Yeah, great.
In fact, we're all looking forward to seeing Pamela Jones from Groklaw there. She's not going to be, but we would dearly love to have PJ from Groklaw come and talk to us sometime when she's ready to do that. That would be awesome as well.
Right. Well, you know, all kidding aside, hopefully if this year goes well, some of those mythical figures will show up, and I think it's going to be great. I'm really glad you guys are doing it. There's a big need, I think, for more Linux and open source conferences. Obviously, as you've seen at Ohio Linux Fest, great deal of interest, getting bigger every year, so I really wish you the best of luck. And I hope it goes well for you.
Thank you so much, Aaron. It's been very helpful to speak with you, and we really appreciate you getting behind this for us.
All right, great. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Aaron.
All right, ready when you are.
I'm the sales manager for Evergreen Internet Solutions. We're a manufacturer of Linux-based routers that compete against Cisco systems. I'm here at Linux Fest because, frankly, we're a Linux-based router manufacturer, and lots of people here are very interested in anything that isn't black box, that isn't proprietary. So it's just a really good market for us, and we've met a lot of new people today.
Any particular products?
Our new Enclave router here is our entry-level T1 router, and it has you can put two T1 ports in it, you can put a serial port in it. We also have a 1U version of the same product.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
My name is Brett Johnson. I work for demonstrate kind of what HP is doing in open source. One of the projects we're involved in is Linux CLE. It's on SourceForge, but yeah, you're getting a shot of the URL there. It is a project that helps people deploy Linux inside of a business or inside of a corporation. It's a way to deploy Linux across a whole bunch of machines.
Great.
That's what we're showing.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Art Van. I'm here with Silicon Mechanics. We're located near Seattle, Washington. But we provide a lot of servers to the open source community around the country. Most of our customers are sysadmins and technical. We're used to working working with people in open source, so therefore what we decided to do is as much as possible help those in the community. So we go to bar camps, we go to Linux Fest around the country, we also go to Linux World in San Francisco, and we also provide a very good website for people to come to.
Great, and you give away free t-shirts.
And we give away free t-shirts and servers.
Awesome. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Linux, and we're here because Linux is a core part of who we are, and we care about Ohio Linux jobs enough to show our offerings to them and make this available.
Great, thank you very much.
Cisco Linux is the rocks, yes. The premier distribution. The most interoperable.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
So my name is Andrew, and I work for a company called Viota. Viota is a
Great. Thank you very much.
We are here at Ohio Linux Fest to basically get the word out to the community.
About
Linux Fest is about community, and when you have the ability on one community to help another, it really makes a lot of sense, and it would be a shame if we didn't take advantage of it.
Yep.
So we were forwarded a YouTube video not too long ago that said the Columbus Salvation Army was moved to collect canned food goods for them. So far, so good.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for doing that. Really appreciate it. Bye.
Things have been going so well that we've actually ran out of discs. We're actually now giving away
Seems like there's been a packed crowd over here all day.
Yeah,
that's good. Great, thanks. Okay, you're on.
Hi, I'm Bob Dion with the Free Software Foundation. We're here at Linux Fest to promote and to get people to join Free Software Foundation, who's inspiring GPL 3 and other freedoms that you enjoy by using Linux distributions.
Great, thank you.
All right, hi, my name is Bill Barnett. I'm the founder of the Ohio, Indiana, Northern Kentucky UTLS Group, which we affectionately call OINC Club. We're a community of PHP developers that meet once a month in Cincinnati, Ohio, to discuss about web development, but essentially PHP-based. And we're here because most folks run PHP in a Linux environment. It's open source software. They're usually developing on a lot of open source software. We're just here to get the word out.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
And we provide pro bono legal services for the free software community. Different developers who come to us, everything have legal trouble or need any sort of legal advice involving licensing, trademarks, copyrights, patents, or anything like that, even for software organizations. And we provide those services.
Wow, that's great. All right, thanks a lot. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Don Dorfheimer with the Linux Professional Institute, and we're here today to promote the Linux certification for our Level 1 and Level 2 training. We're also promoting our future show coming up in Jacksonville, Florida, February 11th, 2008. So go up to linuxshow.com and check out there for another opportunity. You'll get a chance to meet yourself.
Go ahead.
Hi. You can hear me from here?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi.
I hear a lot of everything from here, but I can hear you. Tell me your name first.
Matt Arnold. I'm with PenguinCon, and it's an open source software and science fiction convention in Michigan. It's just north of Detroit. So we've come down here to Ohio Linux Fest in the hopes of, you might say that this is a USS PenguinCon, and we're going to go flying back to PenguinCon with our homes, laden with attendee registrations and new presenters to present on tech topics at PenguinCon, and hopefully some new sponsorships as well. So we've got an LCD screen over here where we're displaying film footage of things that took place at PenguinCon. Next to it, you can see a little anime version of Tux, and we're handing out caffeinated gum and giving people flyers, and a pre-compact disc of sessions of audio and podcasts that took place at PenguinCon 5. And you can find out more about it at penguincon.org, which is where our blog and our podcast take place, where you can find out all the sessions that are going to be rebroadcast there and download them for yourself as well.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, go ahead.
Brian Feather. I am here with the Orlando Geek. We're here for two things. Linux Geek and Big Hands Aware of it. They are going to be supporting. We have two hard plans here. They're
All right, thanks very much. Okay, go ahead.
I'm Dan Washburn. I'm here at NAFCON. NAFCON's conference. It's a technology. We'll be in New York City. It's more showcasing things, interesting things that people have about technology. It's not just about having a Linux box, it's about good for the money.
Do you have a website?
Our website is www.natacon.org.
All right, great. Thanks a lot. He is the greatest guy.
My name is Chad Griffin. I'm with the Modern Linux. All right, what was the formula again?
My name is. We're here because. They're about 30 seconds. That's it. Real quick. I'm rolling. Go ahead.
My name is Dan Washington. I'm here with Link. And we're here to present our show, modelinuxlinks.net, and everybody else's show.
And everybody else's show, that's important.
Everybody else's show.
That's right. All right, great.
So we care about it.
Thank you. I'll be ready.
Okay. My name is Owen Winkler. I'm here with Bari. And we're showing everyone what our new blog show is.
All right. Okay, great. Thanks.